Welcome to the Health Tips Podcast. The Health Tips Podcast is all about health and fitness. But beyond that, it's about fitting in fitness. You probably know everything there is to know about being healthy. Eat right, sleep right, exercise, keep your weight in range, and stay off depression. But this time, we go beyond fitness. We talk about the coronavirus. The coronavirus epidemic is one of the world's greatest challenges, and we are still learning how to deal with the epidemic. There's a lot to be learned about its spread and control. Countries are grappling with the appropriate strategy that balances lives and livelihoods, both of equal importance. I had an insightful conversation with Professor Vishal Rao, who is a member of the COVID Task Force Committee in Karnataka, India. Dr. Rao is no ordinary doctor, but holds a number of positions. He is a surgical oncologist who is a member of the consultative committee. He's a principal scientific advisor to the Prime Minister. He is a WHO technical director for NCDs. He's a member of the High Power Committee on Tobacco and Cancer Control for the Government of Karnataka. He's a member of the NCD Task Force for the Urban Development in Bengaluru. He's a scientist and an innovator with over 18 patents and 100 international publications in research. There was an interesting conversation that I had with Dr. Vishal Rao, and he had some really, really revolutionary ideas. One of which is in which his research shows that the coronavirus may actually have existed in stray dogs and cattle in India many months before it showed in humans, which may have given Indians a slight immunity. So don't miss listening till the end. This is part one of my conversation with Dr. Vishal Rao. So welcome, Dr. Rao, and welcome on our show. It's called the Health Tips Podcast, and we talk about everything health and fitness. And I don't think there is anything which concerns us more right now than the corona epidemic. So, I know that just as an introduction for our listeners and everybody who is listening, Professor U.S. Vishal Rao, he has done his FRCS from Glasgow. He is also the regional director, head, neck, and surgical oncology and robotic surgery. He's also the associate dean for the Center of Academics and Research, works at the HCG Cancer Center, and is a surgical oncologist who holds several important positions with the state and union government, member of consultative group, principal scientific advisor to PM, a WHO technical director for NCD in Karnataka, member of High Power Committee on Tobacco and Cancer Control, member NCD Task Force, member of the COVID Task Force Committee, and a scientist and an innovator with over 18 patents and 100 international publications in research. And that the last sentence is something which I always get excited about whenever I meet you, Dr. Rao, because I know that you are such a, apart from being a regular doctor, you are such an innovative doctor. So, Dr. Rao, just to begin with, tell us, what is the real situation in the corona epidemic in the country and in Karnataka? I know that just today evening you had a meeting with the chief minister, and you are in constant touch with him, and you are really driving the force and the fight against this epidemic. So, with all the conflicting news that is coming around from somebody says it's a small flu, somebody says it's a big disaster. What is the real situation on the corona epidemic?
Thank you, Karanveer, thank you for inviting me for the show. I consider this an honor. I'm so glad that we are sharing these conversations today. So, the very interesting background about corona, if I have to introduce this virus, I will use the words of some of the very interesting things that have been described for this have been that this is a riddle wrapped in a mystery within an enigma. nobody has fully understood this, you know. And that is what today describes our situation. Globally, I don't think any country has got it fully right. Everyone, including the WHO, has somewhere gone wrong. They have been kind of mulling over certain policies, not been able to give a clear strategy. And that is what describes for us the current scenario. Now, having said that, there are certain basic facts that we need to take into consideration. One is that this virus is a very social virus. It loves socially mingling, and that's why we are performing the social distancing act. It's a very social virus. The second thing is it's extremely good at hiding, much better than you in lockdown. So if you are in lockdown thinking that you are hiding, it hides better than you. The third thing is that it has got a crude fatality rate of about 3.5. So which means you can't ignore it. Now, that brings us to the question that what is our benchmark for comparison? The Spanish flu that hit us in 1918, 100 years back, when the social norms were 50% of what it was now, or maybe lesser, killed 200 lakh Indian lives. That is in 1918. So considering, and that time the crude fatality rate of the Spanish flu virus was at 2.5. So naturally, we are dealing with a virus that has tremendous potential and cannot be ignored. Number one. Number two, I would like to say that when we initially started off, we said that we are different from United States. India is different from US. Now we are saying Karnataka is different from Maharashtra. I think that's not completely true. Remember that this virus has about 7 forms, of which 3 of them are lethal, 4 of them are not so much. However, that is for humans. But the background to the story is that these 7 variants are lethal and they have not become less virulent. So with this background, we need to give it the due respect which it commands right now, or it is demanding right now, in whichever way you take it. This virus needs to be given the due respect for it. And that is why the only current measures that we have in this are no treatment. And the closest we can get to a vaccine or a treatment, which we are all racing towards, looks like late 2020 or early 2021. So the next couple of months, we are left with the virus hanging dry, trying to figure out what we can do. And naturally, the process of exploration continues to go on. So we are at very interesting times. And I'm saying that Corona has taught us a lot of things. It has taught us a lot of brilliant stuff. It has taught us a lot of things through hardship. It has taught us a lot of things through our difficulties. And those lessons is something that I would love to share with you all today, to actually give our audience a more broader perspective of what it taught us during this time. Whether it was in science, whether it was in innovation, whether it was in understanding systems and machinery, whether it was in understanding the most beautiful lessons in terms of reverse mentorship, where the younger need to teach the elder. I think there are a lot of lessons that have unfolded in this particular conversations, to the extent that sometimes people who were dismayed went to ask whether humanity was the virus and Corona was the vaccine. To the extreme that people saw socialism, communalism, corruptionism or capitalism brew while humanism was emerging. There were beautiful facets that we saw through Corona. Very beautiful, fascinating facets that Corona brought out in this society. And one of the most fascinating lessons that I think I saw closely was that, I give this very simple example, Karanveer, that when somebody attacks me, and if I know karate, I can defend myself. But if somebody has come to attack me, I can't watch a YouTube video when he's standing in front of me and then say that I'll defend myself. Corona brought us to that particular brink. It taught us that we need to have better preparedness for disasters. For example, lockdown period, when the initial 21-day lockdown period was announced, we had set up an independent think tank with Justice M.N. Venkatachalaya, the former Chief Justice of India, as our chief patron and mentor, to initiate how we could actually come across through cross collaborations, cross expertise of scientists from various backgrounds and non-society, social experts, others coming together, or laymen, to understand what we could do to bring creative thinking into a collective independent think tank to work with the government. And we came across and gave a three-week plan, a 21-day challenge, which said that the week one was the week of preparedness. That means you get prepared with detection kits, you get prepared with personal protection equipment, ventilators, medications, hospital beds. The week two, you conduct a military operation. When you conduct this military operation, should help you build a China wall between the positive and the negative. And in week number three, you open the economy while stabilizing hospitals in such a way that the hospitals have beds and ventilators, and you open up the economy in a very secure way that there are 2 weeks of no positive cases. So which means 2 weeks we should have no positive cases and we open the economy. That would have been an ideal scenario. And what we all re-emphasized was that this is a war that should be won at home, not in the hospital. This is not a war to be won in the hospital. 12th of March, I was supposed to be in London. Michael Bloomberg was hosting the Partnership for Healthy Cities meeting, which was hosted by Dr. Tedros, the World Health Organization Director General, Michael Bloomberg, who is the United Nations UN ambassador, and by Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London. I was a speaker for that event. About a week before, I got a mail telling that I should continue my plans to come to UK, and that we were all on with a thing, and that we should continue to inspire the world by our continued commitment to health. Couple of days just before the event, we got to know that the health minister of UK was affected, and then the pandemic grew and the meeting got cancelled. But ever since, I've been globally connected with all experts across the world, trying to figure out what are the ways in which we can connect this whole thing, what are the ways in which global strategies have to come together, and how are we able to contribute and learn from each other. The one single thing that we have learned is no country has got it fully right. Today, even if you see the most advanced countries such as United States, the Jan 24th, the first case happened. There on Feb 24th, there were thousands of cases every day. To by March 24th, you had 30,000 new cases per day. So this was jumping logarithmically. Now that's because the R0 of the virus, R0 of the virus that we call, is the reproductive capability of this virus, which we say is 2.5 roughly. So let's say 2.5 means that one person can infect 2.5 persons. But what we've not understood is that 2.5 persons can be per minute or can be per hour based on the social norms. So when you slow down the virus, you are reducing the R0 of the virus through social distancing. But when you don't, that means, for example, the techie, one of the early techies who entered India, had infected 2,000 people before he got detected. So that's why this particular number is going to jump logarithmically and not linear. And that's the learning lesson we had to share. So a whole lot of spectrum of learning that we found. And I'm going to add one or two elements to this. The other very interesting aspect that we were confronted, and I'm aware that you are yourself having a biotech company, and you have you juggle two worlds. You juggle the world of information dissemination and the world of information creation. So which is very interesting blend for you. Now, you know, when I went through it and playing so many roles in the government and outside the government, we were actually faced with very interesting things. And I'm going to pose a couple of questions and theories that we were going to ponder upon. And I think I'm going to broadly divide the next conversation of mine into three parts, which is science-centric. The first, what are the changes we saw in science? What are the hurdles we saw in science? And lastly, what are the new messages we are learning in science? So there are broader lessons that we've learned in science. And I'm a man of science. And sitting in the epicenter of this thing, I found a very interesting observation, which we've just written a paper on It's yet to be published, but it's under review in an international journal. But I would like to share that with the audience to kind of disseminate an kind of a thought-provoking question. So the former director of DRDO, Dr. Batra, who's been a colleague, a friend, we were working together with IT Ministry, ITBT Ministry in the government of Karnataka, working on some of the concepts on the COVID virus. And one of the very interesting things that we came across was a strong theory that we observed. The mortality in India has been significantly lower. Now, when we dug up deeper into this, a very interesting finding came to light that many years before itself, before the human coronavirus entered into the system, stray dogs in India and roadside cattle were already harboring the coronavirus. The canine coronavirus and the bovine coronavirus were already being harbored by these stray dogs. And for some strange reason, there has been two similarities between the canine and the bovine coronavirus. That is, the ACE receptor in the dogs is similar to that in humans. And the spike protein that is there in the corona canine viruses is similar to that of the human virus. Wow. So we share a lot of similarities with them, and that's why there could possibly be a cross communication, across interspecies transmission that must have already occurred, that has given us some partial immunity that we have developed to this virus. That's both good news for us, correct? Because India is a house for about 3.5 crore stray dogs and about 15 crore cattle. So that has possibly, that's one of the theories. So when I actually discussed this theory with some of my colleagues abroad, like in the Emory University Vaccine Center and others, they did agree with this, and that they said that this actually could be a strategy for actually us building vaccines. So a lot of things have come out through these sessions of discussion and collaboration. And what Corona, I think, brought to the limelight or the forefront of our discussion at the time of this pandemic was the message that we should use the message of collaboration and not competition. And that's what it brought to us. Another very interesting thing it brought to light is that at this very interesting time, it showed us that this is the juncture at which science contracted. So I was talking to the LGVS team. The LGVS had partnered with us to become our academic and research clinical partner for COVID. And they would actually bombard us with a lot of research. And I was talking to the LGVS team, especially, I think I would like
which
to
is
acknowledge...
Which is the team? Sorry, LG? What is this?
LGVS publication, which handled the Lancet Resource Center and the renowned publications of the world.
Nature and all.
They had partnered with us, you know. Mm-hmm. Not Nature, but Lancet Research Center and the Lancet Journal, the Lancet Medical Journal, and all the other reputed medical international journals comes with LGVS publication. So they had partnered with us to give us all their research center to bombard us with a lot of learning and knowledge. So we would spend sleepless nights reading, understanding, upgrading our knowledge, interacting with experts. So it taught us a lot of lessons at that time. And we were discussing with the LGBS team. I would like to especially acknowledge Ujjwal and Hema for their contributions and support that they did during this time. So one of the interesting things that we came across was science from bench to bedside would take nearly 17 years. So if you see the bench side, which is the lab research, to then it goes to clinical research, and from there it goes to guidelines, and from guidelines it goes to clinical practice.
I mean, I run a biotech company, and I've also been questioning this thing: how do we make a vaccine in 8 months? Because bench to bedside normally for all our products is around 15 years standard, or 15
absolutely.
To 17 years.
Absolutely. So now 17 years is the speed of this. Now time contracted, and this has become 17 days almost. I mean, I'm just saying to get the ball rolling. So what we did see during the corona time was time contract without cutting short the important elements of research. So what created the research and the clinical hyperloop was innovations blended into it. You know, research has always been disconnected with innovations. But corona times actually brought innovation and the clinical hyperloop blended with innovations. I think that's the exciting thing that we observed during this period, that we saw this Hyperloop being created because of the fusion of innovation with research and clinical work. And that kind of brought about a complete new understanding in these perspectives. Naturally, I don't say this is evolved, but I'm saying that it has given the thrust to it. It has given the initial jolt to recognizing the need for such kind of a Hyperloop. And when I used to interact with the top regulatory teams, I used to understand from them that they are also enjoying this, because many of them would otherwise never see the light of the day for some of the products that they actually gave permission for, understanding its potential.
No, absolutely.
So I mean, today they are saying that
one team starts something and then they never see the light of day. After all, 1 in 10,000 molecules only make it to any kind of clinical trial, success. So
absolutely,
so you're totally correct.
So it's been a very fascinating learning on how time contracted and research, innovations, and clinical practices fused together to the extent that it looked like the bench was next to the bedside in COVID. And so these are some of the fundamental things that of status quo that COVID has broken. The fundamental status quo in terms of research and innovations.
So you really have got some interesting points. I mean, the fact that stray dogs and cattle could contribute to our, increased immunity is something which, frankly, even being a biotech person, I had never heard of before. And, so what about all those theories of, having Tulsi and all those recipes which are floating around the internet and WhatsApp and right from inhaling pressure cooker, water vapor and hot water for 2 days and everybody comes. So, I mean, what would you say to all that? Didn't that make any difference? I mean, not the crazy ones, but at least the Ayurvedic ones, curcumin, turmeric, because that's what they were attributing it to earlier, that our increased usage of curcumin and these kind
even
of
even including very interestingly, Karanveer, everything in under the sun, including the sun, has been offered as a solution.
Yes,
several presidents have contributed to the scientific knowledge of the expansion of experiments, on what you could do to experiment to treat COVID, but it has not been true. The one thing that we know, and I had again published a paper, I'm going to share that paper with you. I'm going to share both the papers of ours with you. I had shared the paper on this, which is currently published in one of the international journals and is an accepted hypothesis. So what we did was we found out that people who are younger, that is the children, the kids who have a more immature immune system, are not succumbing to the COVID infection. But the elderly with a more mature immune system seem to succumb to the infection. And when we actually found about this and we dug deeper, we actually found out a very interesting synergy that it's related to the thymus gland. The reason is that thymus is the flash drive in our body that maintains the memory of the virus. Now, post 60 years, the thymus gets involuted and degenerated, and that's why you see them that the 60 plus people seem to be the most vulnerable with comorbidities. And that is the one single group that is seeming to be the most concerned right now in COVID. And that's the funny part that COVID is doing, that although being a communicable disease, it's specifically targeting non-communicable diseases. And we seem to be only running behind the communicable part. I was talking to our health minister and interacting on a very interesting note. And I was telling him, sir, look at this. Nobody has understood this paradox that this communicable disease is fundamentally hunting down the non-communicable diseases. And in this bargain, we've ignored the non-communicable diseases and everybody's focusing on the communicable disease. It's holding and hitting us on the blind side. So what if we had to look at strategies like reverse quarantine, which means that we know today's data that it's the younger who are more commonly affected and more vulnerable, and it is the elderly who have a poor recovery rate and who are having more fatality. So we need to protect the elderly. We need to protect the comorbid. I used to have patients in my OPD in the last couple of days who told me that their HbA1c is as high as 13. And they've not been taking their diabetic medications or hypertensive medications correctly because they're worried about coma, about COVID, so they did not go to visit hospitals. That's the kind of imbalance COVID created to actually make them vulnerable.
No, I'm sorry, but I totally feel in some of my conversations with my fellow scientists and people that Corona has not killed as many people as probably, you know, the people have not gone for their checkups, cancer patients have not gone to hospital, they have not had their biopsies done, you know, tuberculosis patients have not collected their medication in probably villages. So that kind of survey has absolutely not been considered as to how much, you know, non-corona impact facility fatalities have
mortality
happened. Yeah,
absolutely.
So I totally agree with you.
So that's the background with which we are learning to say that we need to now incorporate algorithms of reverse quarantine in our approach, which is going to protect us. Which is going to protect us so that when the younger people who are running the economy are going to go back, they don't infect the elderly and become the cause of deaths of elders. So that's the kind of strategy we propose. So we actually wrote a paper on this with the Harvard Public School, one of the experts, Dr. Deepak, to actually bring about some messages on this, to say that we need to give out larger messages on this. And I think the other aspect that we both again earlier discussed was how do we maintain productivity in the time of corona? Because the one thing that we know that corona is going to leave us with is a psychological impact, a behavioral impact, and an economic impact. These are three things that it's going to scar us with, that is going to be left with us. Psychologically, you see the way, whether it's healthcare or non-healthcare, it's been devastating psychologically. Whether it is going to be depressions, anxieties, worries, whether it's going to be extremes of psychological statuses with the diurnal variations, it's led to that. It's led to more amount of people.
Even domestic violence. No one has considered domestic, the cases of domestic violence. In fact, there's a strange scenario in which some of the builders, I can't remember, major builders of Bombay, they say there's going to be a greater demand for, you know, one or two room homes, because a lot of the joint families who have stayed together will want to actually, you know, separate out in terms of your psychological effects.
Absolutely. So these have been profound. So the social determinants of health have been very, very deep rooted. And that is what corona has brought out the worst among those in this particular times, like you rightly said.
Wait for part two to hear more explosive insights into the strategy, including how you can protect yourself and the development of the vaccine. Thank you, Dr. Rao, and all of you who are listening in your car, on the flight, not so many flights right now though, in the kitchen or any point of the day. And if you liked what you heard, I'd love you to do something. Just head over to iTunes, the podcast section, and give us a 5-star rating. Also, if you have friends who you think would be helped with all this, do share the podcast with them. If you have a comment, write to me at tandarost@gmail.com. That's tandarost@gmail.com. I've got to thank Atharva Marcom, India's best public relations firm, who generously support our efforts at the Health Tips podcast. See you next time. Keep moving, stay healthy, stay fit.